Are you ready for a wild and hilarious ride through World of Crime?
Then look no further, because our podcast, Two Boxes of Wine and a Crime, is here.
Join me, Tasha.
And me, Trisha.
Two ex-cons who love
wine, coke, and crime.
As we unravel cold case murder cases drunk off our ass.
Each episode, we invite you to grab a box of wine.
As we use Google, humor,
and of course, cocaine.
To crack the toughest unsolved crimes.
Drunk off our ass.
From small town homicides
to 9/11. We have it all figured out.
Or at least we think we do.
Listen as the mystery deepens.
The laughter gets louder.
And of course, cocaine.
And the wine starts flowing.
Drunk off our ass.
In our entertaining, illegal, and
unforgettable podcast.
So join me, Tasha.
And me, Trisha.
On a coke-fueled journey to serve justice.
With two boxes of wine and a crime.
Available now on your favorite podcast app.
Subscribe and tune in every
Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for new episodes.
Drunk off our ass.
So, Will, did you know that some people listen to the podcast on double speed?
And so I thought that I would speak incredibly slowly and then very fast that I couldn't actually do it and I have to listen to the podcast at normal speed.
You know, I tried that. I tried the 1.5 speed or double speed thing for a while. And, you know, eventually it was mighty. Like, you know, it was great. But the problem was,
what?
Is when I started listening to people in the real world, my brain was going, speak faster, speak faster, speak faster, speak faster, 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 speak faster, speak faster, speak faster. But then when I said I gotta get off this like double speed jam and I went back to regular speed, everyone sounded like they were drunk. And that was fucking weird. It took me about a week to reacclimatize to the regular speed of speech.
Isn't it amazing? It's almost like we have a Marvel superpower.
Yes. Oh, you double speed freaks.
I'll use small words that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
What did you say?
You are a sad, strange little man.
Don't call me stupid.
Hello and welcome to The Best Bits, a movie podcast where each week we pick our favourite scenes from randomly selected, weirdly specific themes. This is your co-host Kevin, a writer of 15 films. There's 14 of them which I'm not legally allowed to discuss in this podcast, but I've definitely written them and don't look into that. And I'm joined by my co-host who's written just 3 films plus a Christmas special, Will. What's the crack?
How are you doing, Kevin? The crack is mighty. And I can't wait. So you've ghostwritten. You've been like one of those uncredited ghostwriter on 14 films.
I am not
films.
Legally allowed to discuss it on the podcast, yeah. But yes, just don't look into that.
Fantastic work.
So, Will, how are you?
I am so good, Kevin. I'm so good. I'm here. I'm doing the podcast. We're going to talk about... What are we talking about this week, Kevin? What's your topic? What's your topic?
We're talking about post-credit scenes.
Post-credit.
But actually, I want to massage that a little bit.
Okay.
And I want to include end-credit scenes.
Oh.
Because post-credits are, if you're taking them quite literally, it's like the scenes that come at the very, very end of like a credit crawl. But end-credit scenes, there's a little more of those. So, I want to see if I can bring them all in. Because there are 453 official end credit scenes.
Okay.
So it's not all Marvel, as some might think.
As some might think. Those 20-something Marvel films all have a post-credit scene.
23, yeah.
I'm glad you clarified that.
But the music that I'm playing right now under this is actually taken from the very first post-credit scene.
Oh.
And it's from 1966. And it's from The Silencers, which is a Dean Martin knockoff of a Bond film. And it ends with Dean Martin sort of... doing that typical thing of his character will return in the next adventure, which is going to become a trend with a lot of these post-credits stingers. He didn't actually return. So it was a setup for a movie that didn't happen. But yeah, that's the very first post-credit scene. It was in 1966, so it wasn't in Iron Man.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'm bloody well glad. So that's like ambitious producers saying, yeah, let's just set them up. We're building this franchise, baby. It's going to happen. I think everyone feels bad for the filmmakers when they watch those films now and go, it didn't happen. I'm so sorry for everyone involved.
Yeah, I even wrote a post-credit scene once. It was it was for Grabbers, obviously, and we were planning to shoot it. I can't remember. I was trying to sort of like go back over my memory of events, and I can't remember whether it was in the schedule and it got dropped during the shoot because we were up against it at that point, or it got cut as soon as we had the schedule, so we knew that we just didn't have time for it. But it was similar to sort of the end of the Avengers, where it ended with, you know, you'd have the credit sequence and then it would go back into the pub with all the surviving Islanders basically hungover and sitting around the bar, their heads in their laps, and the place being a bomb site. And we pan across, and over behind the counter you have Paddy, who's basically just stealing a pint for himself. And that was going to be our post-credits thing, which was before the Avengers. So
yeah,
I remember watching that Avengers thing and thinking, oh, they just did what we were planning to do, but we never shot it, so...
Oh,
yeah,
man.
They're fun.
I have one. I think we have one in Song of the Sea. But I never call this post-credit. When I'm writing those things, I always just kind of go, it's the coda. I would kind of like, you know, it's the kind of the button of the whole story. And it's basically after the credits, the kind of the first kind of title credits kind of roll. But it's still, it's like a couple of months after the action, the events of the story. And it kind of shows the happy, perfect world has been kind of like created after the story and how the family have kind of come together again. And it's just kind of like a snapshot into the future of like, hey, everything's okay. The family survived. Look how fun and together they are right now.
That's actually kind of similar to what they do in Toy Story 3, isn't it? Where after he gives the toys away at the end of the film to Bonnie, and that's quite sort of a really sad, poignant moment. They then have that little coda where it plays over the credits.
New toys!
Where you see that all the toys sort of fit in with Bonnie, and they're actually settling in quite nicely, and they're enjoying their new sort of surroundings. So it's sort of a nice way to sort of send the audience out into the big bad world feeling light.
It's really good for kind of like family films or films where you know you're going to have young audiences. And in the case of Toy Story 3, and I suppose to an extent, Song of the Sea, where kids have kind of gone through a bit of a traumatic experience as well along the way. And you kind of want your audience walking away feeling everything's okay. Like you really want to say, listen, no, seriously, everything's okay. Any kind of sad feelings you may have or kind of residue of, oh, are they, you know, about worry for this character or that character is kind of put to rest, and you kind of come away feeling, oh, that world is fine. They're all happy, you know. So I think they're important in those types of stories.
Yeah, because one of the first sort of studios or franchises to sort of really embrace it was the Muppets. So the Muppets did their version of like playing us out over the end credits in the 1979 film that they did, their first film. And that was like one of the very first to do it. You had, as I said, you had the Silencers in 1966, but there was only three post-credit sequences in the 60s. One of the like really standout ones, and one that is pretty, you know, harrowing, is Night of the Living Dead, where they're showing you like snapshots of all the bodies being piled up and they're burning them.
Wow.
But there weren't that many of them. But then the Muppets sort of decided to actually shoot something specifically for the end credits.
Oh, I just knew I'd catch up with you boys.
What'd you think?
And then when the 80s came along, it sort of like, it was a lot of the Burt Reynolds, like Cannonball Run and Smokey and the Bandit, where they're playing outtakes and bloopers, and it's sort of a fun way to sort of like let the audience in on the making of the movie and sort of have fun with the cast as they were making it.
In the case of Cannonball Run, it was actually, it's the bloopers at the end were the things that I remember the most and actually laughed at the most, I think, from those films.
Because if I had enough time, I would take those rosary bleeds and stuff them up your nose.
These bleeds?
Those bleeds, yeah.
You gonna take these bleeds and shove them up?
I'd take these bleeds here. What?
Definitely. And that became sort of like what end credits were for a long time. They were like, they weren't what we have now with the Marvel movies where they're teasers. They were all just the sort of blooper reels that they tag on at the end. You know, you talked about Toy Story 3 earlier on and the coda that they have. But even Pixar, they did a parody of the outtakes as outros for Toy Story 2. So they were that defined by blooper reels as being what you'd put at the end of a film that they even did their own riff on it.
Marker and action.
No. Okay. A little help here, please.
But then you had, like, you had Jackie Chan as well, sort of getting in where he wasn't just showing you outtakes. He was just showing you, like, accidents that were happening on set where he's just failed to kill himself, where it's just a series of montages of him basically requiring hospitalization after some stunt has gone wrong.
Oh, my God. And it kind of, I think it plays into the next film in a weird way within the Jackie Chan franchise, because you're going in kind of going, well, he really did, they really do injure themselves doing this stuff, like, you know, and you're kind of looking forward to the
throwing himself into it.
It's just shocking. It's just shocking what they put them. It's like watching Jackass, only like really skilled and graceful.
But you know what I was saying? Like, you had you had outtakes and blooper reels and stuff. But do you know what the first sort of post-credit scene was that used them as sort of a setup for another movie? Like the first sort of like Iron Man version of setting up the Avengers. Do you know what the first film was to do that?
Okay. Okay. Can you give me a clue of a decade? Give me a decade.
It's the 80s. It's the first one to sort of set up the next big villain of an intended franchise that didn't come to pass again.
Is it Superman 2? No, Superman 3.
No, it was young Sherlock Holmes.
Oh!
It ends with them teasing Moriarty. And yeah, they didn't make that film.
I've never seen that. I've never seen that post-credit scene. I never knew that.
Can I help you?
I'd like a room, please.
Please, to sign here.
Yeah, there's a few of them. When I was looking into this, I was sort of shocked about how many films had post-credit scenes that I'd not seen or even heard about. And one of the ones that sort of stood out, and one of the most fun ones, was from Lethal Weapon 3.
What's that one?
Like, as I was saying, you've got like these post-credits that feel like they're repurposed footage. So they're sort of taking moments like either outtakes or blooper reels, or they're doing callbacks to jokes that have happened earlier in the film. Like Airplane would have, they do a callback to the taxi that's outside the airport with the meter still running. And that feels like
still running.
That feels like it could have gone in the film, but they saved it and put it at the end. And
which makes it funnier.
And they do it as well in Adventures in Babysitting, where the guy is, the Graydon character, is hanging on to the side of the skyscraper still. You cut back to him still doing that. And those are the ones where you feel like, was that intended to go as a post-credit scene all along, or was it just decided that they could do it and it would make the most sense to
throw it in?
And the Elite Weapon 3 one feels like that as well, because it's basically Riggs and Murtaugh pulling up to a building and you never see the characters.
Yes.
So you just hear the two actors riffing as you're seeing this establishing shot of the car pulling up to the building, and they're like bantering back and forth about, so do you think they're going to let us do this again, you know, after what happened the last time, because there was a building exploded in the film earlier.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, do we cut the red wire, the blue wire?
Those guys going to get in the way again?
Okay, there it is. You happy? Let's go.
We ain't seen nothing yet. Come on, just get me up there.
It's locked up. The boys and blues got it under control.
Can't see the bomb squad anywhere.
They're coming.
Okay, all right. Let's stop here. Okay, stop here, and I'll just get out.
No, don't get out the car, Riggs. No. Riggs!
Tell me, Rog, was it red wire, blue wire?
I don't know, Riggs. Get me out of here. Step on the gas.
They're never going to believe this.
Oh, nobody saw us.
They're going to blame us.
Okay, let's keep calm. All right, let's keep cool.
Oh, I think you better get your girdle out of mothballs, Rog.
I get it. We're back in uniform again.
One that fits.
10 more years of this. 10 more years.
Oh, I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah, it just feels like it's a bit of a laugh that they were having, where they thought we could use this footage and sort of put it at the very, very end of the film. But no one knows it's there, because obviously...
I've seen that.
Have you seen it? But who was like waiting to the very end of the VHS tape to run out, or sitting there to the very end of the screening, unless you were trying to like steal a seat in the next showing?
People who didn't have remote controls like we did back in the day, and you just sat there and waited for someone to get up and press stop or whatever it was. We'd no remote controls, so you're just like sitting there just watching.
Did you have like a broom handle? Could you not like stab at the telly with like a handle? or a wand.
No, even some of the buttons were broken on it, so you had to, like, you know, risk electrocuting yourself by jamming your finger into the slot where the button should be. So I was kind of like, who's going to...
Won't some of your family hear this, Will? Do you really want to be putting yourself
there? It's truth. Our TV was a similar situation. Jeez. But sure, like, it was everything, anything anyone had back in the 80s, it was all, like, repaired until, like, you know, everything was just secondhand and repaired until it can be repaired no more. But yeah, that one in Lethal Weapon 3, I do remember it because it sticks out in my mind, because the ADR, because it was clearly ADR, is so incongruous with what you see on screen. It's kind of like, they're not really there. This is just them just kind of like...
Yeah, very sedate car driving up and...
Oh, no. I remember that one. And one that pops into my head now that you say it from the 80s is the Ferris Bueller one. You know, at the very end, Ferris Bueller... And the credits roll, and Ferris shows up on screen. He says, "Are you still here? Why don't you leave?
Go home."
And you see, that's one that it feels like it's taking its influence from the Muppets, because the Muppets obviously had Animal doing the same thing.
Yeah,
it's them sort of like doffing their cap to that. Because with a lot of these post credits, it feels like that filmmakers have been inspired by other filmmakers that have done something similar, and then they want to do their own version of it.
Kevin, there's something actually just popped into my head as you said that. Putting my mindset back to those days. Do you remember back in the days of albums, when you would have an album and you let it roll, and sometimes at the very end of an album...
A hidden track.
And maybe there's a kind of a cross-pollination there of that idea of, like, just we'll put in this, that kind of sense of put in a hidden scene or a hidden moment at the very end, just so that the audiences just feel like they found something secret, because it was before the internet and all that sort of jazz. And sometimes as a kid, when you did get films on VHS, and maybe the reason they're there is because of VHS, because people did consume these over and over again, I remember kind of watching them to the end.
Well, I think it also might as well be the DVDs, because they didn't really explode until the DVD era. Like, they had them popping up every so often, but obviously it's a lot easier with a DVD to skip to the very end. So that's my theory, but I like your theory as well. That makes sense to me, that there could be sort of a music influence.
And also, once you could actually play it at home, once that's the genesis of being able to rent these things and watch the tapes at home and forward to the end and kind of, you know, there's something about it that's, maybe there's something there, maybe not.
So you had the Ferris Bueller one, and then they went one further with Scrooge.
And they lived happily ever after.
Where Bill Murray is basically leading the whole cast in a sing-song, and it becomes this sort of musical moment where everyone's singing Put a Little Love in Your Heart. And it cuts to all the different characters from different scenes in the movie just dancing and singing the song and miming to camera and basically having a party. And that is one that I think was so influential that it popped up again and again and again. Like, the Farrelly brothers then did that with There's Something About Mary, where the end of that film, it all becomes Build Me Up Buttercup, where all the characters and the crew, you know, that are coming in and out of shots and, like, fixing hair and makeup, or, you know, you've got people with walkie-talkies, they're all sort of joining in and having this sing-song with the cast, and it just sort of creates sort of an expanded version of the outtakes where it's letting you in on the filmmakers making the film, and it's just a lovely sort of warm, celebratory sort of, like, ending to a movie. But that sort of feels like Scrooge kicked that off, and it was inspired by Ferris Bueller, which was inspired by the Muppets, and I just sort of found it really fascinating to sort of thread the line back through the different films and see how people have used post credits in very different ways to how we think of them now with the Marvel movies, which is like setups for what's coming next, what's the next big bad, the sort of commercial for the next movie.
Let's hear the real men. All right, the women now this time. No, the real women. You know who you are. Are you, who was making all the noise through the whole movie?
My brother, the King of Christmas.
I love that idea. You're reminding me of that Scrooge one, and that kind of like it's kind of like the curtain call on a stage play where you bring up all the cast and they all take a bow and you get one last moment with them, you know, where they're kind of out of character slightly. It's kind of a thank you to the audience, or it's a it's a kind of that kind of joyful celebration moment that you would get in that. You're so right. I actually have totally not thought about post credits until you're bringing it up, but you're how they've changed in their function and form.
And then, of course, some films that are about music will have a performance that will play us out over the end credits with the characters in character, like School of Rock, where you're basically getting to see what Jack Black does after the concert, where he's got his music school and he's playing with all the kids and he's like, you know, telling them to melt my face, give me a solo. And it's lovely to sort of like watch that play out over the end credits rather than it just cutting to black and that being an end crawl.
I love that School of Rock one. That feels so, because it is so improvised and in the moment and handheld and everyone's having a blast, and it really does feel like a lovely send off, getting a kind of a treat at the very end. And
that's such a great film as well. I don't know if it's in as high a standing as I think it should be, but I think it's a lovely, brilliant little film that doesn't feel like it feels a lot more modern than it is, because it's what, 2003, you know, it's nearly 20 years old, but it feels sort of very progressive in its treatment of all the characters, and it doesn't make fun of any of the kids, and Jack Black sort of just is perfect for supercharging all those scenes and sort of making them sort of come alive. And it's a cracking story.
It's
Richard Linklater, obviously.
The guy who wrote it is Jack Black's flatmate.
So in the post-credit sequence,
that's a C. All right, you got that? Let's see. Okay, Paolo, let's see you. Yeah, your fingers are basically right. Deshaun, what do you got? Let's see. All right, play. Toby, you got it? Let's see. Very good. You got
well, he's basically teaching the younger generation.
Mike White.
Mike White, isn't it? He's teaching the younger kids, again, that like toddlers. And like, you know, yeah, give me a beat. Oh, very good. And how about you? And yeah, you just sort of see that they've turned a little griff into an academy.
Oh, man. And he was actually originally supposed to direct this film as well. But what happened was obviously the budget went up. And he hadn't directed anything before, and the cost of those tracks. I think it was the cost of licensing of the music that really massively inflated the budget of that film. But yeah, that's a cracker. That's a great post-credit scene. Or end, would you call that? It's an end-credit scene, isn't it?
I'd say that's end-credit scene, because it just plays us through the credits.
It is my face, okay? I think you melted it off! All right. Now the next thing
But do you remember sort of like seeing post-credit scenes and being let down by them? Because our generation, we would have been, they would have been presented to us just like with the MCU, the Marvel films. But obviously, they didn't amount to anything. So you had like Masters of the Universe, where Skeletor pops up out of the water and he's like, I'll be back.
I'll be back.
And he wasn't back.
And maybe 8-year-old me was kind of going, you're all right, we're grand.
You can keep it.
You don't need to. It's fine. Stay down there.
But I'll tell you one that I remember seeing in the cinema and feeling like it wasn't a post-credit scene, but it was teasing the next film. And it was the first time where, I don't know what age it was, it must have been 7 or something, and I was disgusted by the film. I thought, is that it? Is that the ending? But it was Back to the Future 2.
Doc! Okay, relax, Doc. It's me. It's Martin.
No, it can't be. Just sent you back to the future.
Yeah. Oh, I know. You did send me back to the future, but I'm back. I'm back from the future.
And Back to the Future 2 ended with a trailer to Back to the Future 3. And I was sitting there going like, what? That's the ending? We're just going to get a trailer for the next film that's coming out in 6 months' time? And it was in the Wild West. I didn't sign up for this. I came to see a movie, not an installment. This is outrageous.
I know that feeling. I know that feeling because I think whether it was on the VHS as well, I'm not sure, but it was kind of like, hold on a second. Yeah, there was that sense of you haven't given me that full. Because it's, again, you haven't given me a the end. You haven't given me a the end. I want the end. And that film really is missing that. Although I do love Back to the Future 2. I love...
I want Finn, to be honest. I want to have that very ornate Finn.
You just bring into my head the experience of sitting in a cinema waiting for the credits, the post-credit scene to come up and the lights are coming up and you're feeling awkward and embarrassed. And bad for holding the staff up and stuff like that. Did you ever get that feeling? You're like going, oh God, here I am. They're supposed to be in the credit scene and the lights are up and the staff are literally just down at the bottom of the thing with their bags. And you're just kind of, well, you know, and you can just feel them kind of going, well, you fucking move. I've got to fucking clean the screen. Like, you know, but there's a post credit scene.
I remember you, thanks to Marvel, you turn up at the cinema and they'd say to you, and stay for the end. There's a post credit scene. And you think, ah, fuck it. I don't care. But it became sort of the thing where they'd have to tell you to stay to the end, or they'd have to tell you there's no post-credit scene. You don't need to stay.
And for the first couple of years, it was really awkward. It was just like there was maybe me. I remember I would go see it with like buddies of mine. We'd go see a Marvel film, like Liam Burke and Gar and stuff like that. And we would just be sitting there. And no, there's a scene. You know, everyone's left, and we're the only ones.
Wouldn't you just be checking on your phone? Like, I have my phone open the whole time when I'm in the cinema, so I'm like, I'd be Googling and making sure, is there a post-credit scene? And, you know, if I can't find an answer, I'll be texting people and, you know, make a few phone calls. And
well, these were earlier days, and it was around the time of the
way back Iron in Man. The old days of 2010.
When Iron Man was doing it, first of all, it was like there is a scene at the end of this. But there was one, which was, I don't think they actually had a post credit scene at the end of the last one, Endgame. Am I right in saying
no?
That?
Did they
have? So that was kind of like, finally, it's over. We don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah, but when you think about it, just that one post-credit scene set up 23 films, several TV shows, you know, it's inspired hundreds of other films to copy them and create their own franchises based off of what are essentially commercials for the next film. I think when people see this title to this episode, they're going to think, oh, it's just going to be all about the 23 Marvel films. But as I said, there was 450 of them. But Marvel have sort of like dominated that space and turned them into their own thing, where they're not blooper reels, they're not outtakes, they're not sort of like musical moments. They're story points, and they're necessary, that you have to see them. Mm-hmm. And when I was looking into this, out of the 23 films, you know, there are 30 minutes of post-credit scenes.
Crikey.
That is a lot of post-credits. Are there any that stick out in your mind as like good post-credit scenes where you think that was a great moment?
Very, very. I was never like a big Marvel guy. I was never like, you know, I never was super invested in that universe, even though, you know what I mean? I'm the very casual kind of like, yeah, I like this, fun, it's entertaining, it's bombastic. So whenever they drop something kind of esoteric, like, you know, when
who's that? What?
I'd be more like that. I have no idea. Like, oh, there was a Howard the Duck in Guardians of the Galaxy. I went, oh, Howard the Duck, yeah. George Lucas' guy.
Well, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 felt like, that's what I felt like, they'd slightly pushed it, because they had five in that. Had James Gunn's brother, Kraglin, sort of messing with the Yakka arrow, sort of the whistle thing. Yeah. Then you had Stallone popping up as the Ravager, and he was sort of introducing us to his team, or telling us what he was going to do next, which we haven't seen yet. Then you had Groot as the surly teen. Mm. Then you had the tease of Adam Warlock in his cocoon, as sort of like the next sort of major character to be introduced in the MCU. And then the very last one, probably the best of all of them, was Stan Lee was revealed to be a spy, an informant for the Watchers. So every single cameo that he had in all the MCU movies, he was playing the same character, who was basically just moving around and watching events and reporting back to the Watchers. And
no,
I thought that was a lovely
way
to wrap up.
I saw that and did not understand what was happening. Like, I just went, oh, those are the guys. I remember those guys. So he is, oh, I love that. That's kind of nice. That's a really, if I understood what was actually happening, then that would have been great. But at the time, I just went, there's the Stan Lee cameo. Cool. And there's some aliens. Cool.
Obviously, it all kicked off with, like, Iron Man in 2008 with Sam Jackson sort of turning up as Nick Fury and hinting about the Avengers.
Jarvis, welcome home, sir. I am Iron Man. You think you're the only superhero in the world? Mr. Stark, you become part of a bigger universe. You just don't know it yet.
Who the hell are you?
Nick Fury, director of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Huh.
I'm here to talk to you about the Avenger Initiative.
That wasn't even the first post-credit scene of a superhero film. The first one was actually from Spy Kids, and the first comic book one was from Ghost World in 2001 as well, and the first Marvel one was from Daredevil. The end of Daredevil has Colin Farrell. He's in sort of bandages and he's confined in a hospital, sort of like wrecked, and there's a fly buzzing around him, and he picks up a needle and he stabs the fly into the wall. And this is all sort of happening is Ben Affleck's Daredevil is giving this sort of very bored voiceover.
They say there's no rest for the wicked. But what about the good? The battle of good versus evil is never ending. Because evil always survives.
Bullseye.
They hadn't really perfected him at that stage.
Oh.
But you had other Marvel movies doing him as well. You had, like, it was in Constantine. It was in Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer. And X-Men Last Stand had one where they teased sort of the revival of Professor X. So, you know, the MCU gets all the credit for post-credits. But they existed long before Iron Man.
I think there's one that I incorrectly remember. When you said it there, I just went, oh, does Batman Returns have an in-credit or a post-credit scene of Catwoman kind of like standing up? But that must be just be the last shot of the film. That's probably the last shot of the film. I'm just being mistaken.
I know that was shot a couple of weeks before the film debuted. So they went back in and they made a puppet of Catwoman. And if you watch that sort of moment, and I think it is the very last shot of the movie, it doesn't make sense that she's standing there because the shot begins panning up over like Gotham City.
Yeah.
And there's nothing for her to be standing on. And then Catwoman raises into a puppet of Catwoman raises into frame and sort of it looks out over Gotham. So yeah, it's not.
Yeah. I always remember it being weird.
It's not a post-credit scene, but yeah, you'd be forgiven for thinking it was.
You poor guys. Always confusing your pistols with your products.
This is one that popped into my head, actually, as you said it. It's one of the Chucky films. The most recent was The Bride of Chucky.
No, it's Curse of Chucky. This?
Curse of Chucky. There's like a Curse 2 minutes. Yeah, they bring back the original kid. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, they bring back Andy Barclay.
Yeah, that's right. It's so fun because Chucky has himself posted or something like that to Andy's house. And as Andy's talking to the delivery person at the door, where the box is in the background in Andy's, you know, living room, or he's on top of his on top of a board, and you just see this knife coming up and the box being opened from the inside, and there's Chucky. And the big surprise is there's when he gets up, Andy's there to meet him with a shotgun ready. He's been waiting for this moment. And that's a fun one. That's a really fun, clever one.
Play with this.
Andy!
Planet of the Apes has one as well, which feels like it's quite important to that franchise. It's not the remake.
Oh.
No, it's not the other remake. It's the second remake.
No, the Rise of the Planet.
Sorry. It's the third remake that was made after the telly remakes.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
The fourth iteration. The first one of those, like the 12th film. Of the 14 they've made so far. It was that scene.
Not at all confused now, Kevin. That's great.
I had a joke and you started talking over me and I was like trying to get through the joke. I was making a joke all about how many, there's been like 15 of those films.
I love that one. That one actually is the most...
They spread the virus.
Yeah, that one actually filled me with a little bit of... the creeps because it's so prescient right now, because we see how does this thing travel and it's a pilot has got the disease, and there's a little bit of a drop of blood on the floor in the airport, and you just know it is going to spread and cut to the next film, and indeed it has spread. What a great franchise. What a great trilogy those three films were, actually. Those Planet of the Apes films.
It was definitely the best 12th film in a franchise.
Oh, well, if you were to work out which one of the Marvel films was the 12th film, well, we'll argue about it tomorrow. When we figure that out.
Okay. No, because I'm going to figure out what was...
Wow. Marvel movie.
It was Ant-Man.
Oh. Said the guy who was just like not a big fan of Ant-Man.
What was the post-credit scene in Ant-Man?
Ants.
Ants. Ants. Ant-Man.
I think it was the Quantum Realm or something like that.
That was Ant-Man 2. That was Ant-Man 2, I guess.
Listen to you, Ant-Man. You're such a fan of the Marvel films, you shill.
I'm calling it Ant-Man 2 and not its official title.
Can I tell you, right? Yeah. I once, when I was on the first bottle tour around LA,
right?
I had a meeting with Marvel, and this was before Avengers had come out. I think Thor was coming out, and... Okay. I hadn't read a single Marvel comic in my life. I didn't know any of them. Since then, I've read almost all the big stories for pure pleasure, just because I found them, you know, really fascinating once I got into them. Once I got an iPad, I started like caning through all these classic Marvel comics and DC comics and what have you. But I went to that meeting, and it's the one time where I was like going, what the fuck am I going to talk about? I'm going in to see the two people at Marvel who are pretty big now, and their names are all over the movies, and I don't know anything about Marvel, and I remember having to do a dance for like an hour to try and not talk about the comics because I didn't have a fucking clue. And when they asked me, I remember referring back to like the cartoon, the Firestar, Iceman and Spider-Man cartoon, and that was as deep as my knowledge went.
This is you're there like you're there going
horrible.
But seriously though, look, you don't know how much I love Superman. Superman is fucking amazing. It should really give me a shot to do a Superman movie.
That sounds like you're taking the piss out of me, but that was actually verbatim what I said.
Did you?
I did. I started talking about Superman the movie because it's like, I don't know. I don't like the X-Men films, and obviously that wasn't their franchise. I was like, I don't know what to fucking talk to these people about. And for an hour, I was sat, and there was two of them as well. So when there's two people staring at you, you feel like you have to put on a show. And I was like, I can't wait for the next movie. Iron Man was good. And the post-credit scene from that interview was me walking here and basically just like collapsing and going like, what a fucking embarrassing hour-long general meeting.
Oh, man. I love it. I love embarrassing stories because I can put myself in your shoes.
I have so many of them.
Oh, man. That's fantastic.
But they were lovely to me. They were absolutely lovely to me, but I wasn't ready for that meeting. And when you are doing the bottle tour, and when you don't live in LA and you're sort of flying in for like a week, they cram all the meetings in back to back. So that was probably like my 20th meeting that week, and you know, you're harried when you get there, and you feel like, oh Jesus Christ, where do I park and how do I drive? And you walk in and it's like, so
I know it, man. Just getting to the meeting for us poor Irish, you know, Irish lads in that temperature. Well, you know, it's quite balmy over there, but it's nice. It's just like, so I made it. I'm alive. I made it here. You won't believe it. I'm here. I was on a plane and I'm here. And you feel like, you know, you deserve, they should just, you know, give you a round of applause or something like
that. The one good thing, though, about being in the States is that you don't realize that your accent, your actual voice, is a superpower. And that if you walk up to somebody and you say to them, like, come here to me, where's the door? I can't find a way out. They will drop everything to help you because they think, oh, this poor person, they need help. Yeah. So it would become a crutch that I would use again and again, because you'd be like, I'd be afraid that I'd walk out a window. Yeah. So, like, as I was saying, you had, like, blooper reels, you had outtakes, you had sing-along sort of, like, celebrations with the cast and crew. And then they became sort of, like, story-focused, where Marvel was obviously doing them, but other films were doing them as well. And one of the best ones that I can think of, it's not my best bit, but it's one where it's a post-credit sequence or an end-credit sequence where I think it's better than the whole film itself, and it sort of takes the film to another level. And it's the Hangover's end sequence.
Hey, guys. Look what I found.
Whoa, that's my camera.
Yeah, it was lodged in the backseat of the car.
Oh, are there photos on it?
Yeah.
And you get to see all the pictures from the night before of all the debauchery and the tattoos and the shit that was happening.
I say we delete it right now.
Are you nuts? I want to find out how I wound up in the hospital. Is that in there?
Yeah, it's in there.
Guys, one time. Deal?
Deal.
Deal.
Okay. Lord.
That deserves its place in the movie. It doesn't feel extraneous. It actually feels like that is the perfect way to end that particular story.
Yeah, because the story is built around that mystery of the question of everyone having forgotten what the hell happened. So for it to be revealed is quite satisfying. And yeah, it is. You're absolutely right. It's the best thing about. It's the first film that I haven't seen. I don't think I've seen the second or third one. But it definitely.
They do it in the second one as well. But it. They recreate it and it just doesn't have the same impact.
Okay.
As I said before, I think I said it on another podcast, that it's very hard to do comedy sequels because you're basically, all comedy is about surprise. And if you're recreating the same jokes, they just don't have the same sort of like punch to them.
The one thing that you're reminding me of when I looked into it, I do have one post-credit scene that I think is fantastic and funnier, as funny as the previous film, and it's the post credit scene for 22 Jump Street.
Oh yeah,
where they continue on. They posit all of the future sequels to all of the 21 Jump Street, the Jump Street franchise.
Now, for your next mission, you two sons of bitches are going to medical school.
That's where they're making fun of us. Well, you know, we would tease sequels that never came, and they're deliberately trolling us with these
and
sequels.
They're fantastic. Like, there was 2023 Jump Street, you know.
This time, foreign exchange students.
Awesome. Yes.
In Russia.
What?
Cooking school.
You two sons of bitches are going to culinary school.
There's a microchip in this empanada.
Old family recipe. Best to keep it a secret.
Yeah.
Preschool, they go to got dance school, eventually they end up out in space, but like it goes on and on and on and on and on, and they have like these little vignettes that they actually shot, like there might be a little mini action scene that.
No, that's Schmidt. I don't know what you're talking about, man. He look exactly the same to me.
I got new glasses.
Yeah, man, he just got some new glasses, man. God damn.
No one's gonna fucking notice.
Let's do this, Schmidt.
Yeah. Like we always do, Jenkins.
Like, a lot of effort and expense went into making this post-credit scene, and that was actually going to be my best post-credit scene, or in-credit scene. It is so funny.
It's so funny.
Just look at it on YouTube. They really took the idea and just ran with it and ran with it and ran with it, where it went beyond, like, it just got funnier and funnier and funnier the further they took it, like, you know? And it's so clever.
Traffic school. Military school, scuba class, dance academy.
Yes, finally, something I'm amazing at.
So I think that would be the default best bit if people are unhappy with my pick, because my one is a bit of a cheat. And I mentioned earlier on that Ghost World was one of the first comic book movies to have a post-credit sequence. And they actually had a moment in that film where Steve Buscemi, it's like an alternate take of a sequence that happened earlier in the film, where Steve Buscemi, instead of getting his ass kicked robbing the convenience store, he actually wins the fight. And, you know, the crew are sort of laughing in the background.
Motherfuckers! You fuck with me!
And that sort of is like an alternate version of like a sliding doors version of what could have happened. And that is where I'm going with my post-credit scene pick, because my one had not one post-credit sequence, not two, it had three. And I had a proposed fourth one that they never shot. And what they really were actually alternate endings to the film itself. Because my pick is, it's from 1985, and it's Clue.
Every person in this room has the perfect motive.
Stand back!
For murder.
What do you mean? Murder.
But only one of these suspects is the murderer. Is it the timid Mr. Green?
Why are you screaming?
Because I'm frightened!
Of what?
Screaming!
Or the militant Colonel Mustard?
If I was the killer, I would kill you next.
Huh?
Said if. If.
Mrs. White, who helped her husband on his way.
What's a matter of life after death? Now that he's dead, I have a life.
Miss Scarlet, who's helped many men along the way.
Practice makes perfect. Huh.
Professor Plum, who's looking for a way.
I'm looking.
Mrs. Peacock.
I have absolutely no idea what we're doing here, but I am determined to enjoy myself.
Or did the butler do it?
No.
Paramount Pictures invites you to an evening of mystery.
Let us in! Let us out!
Murder.
This is getting quite serious.
And madness. In the movie that makes a scene of the crime.
Someone did it!
Clue. It's not just a game anymore.
Oh my God. Right. Okay. Oh God. I said, what? What could this possibly be? Clue. I've seen it once.
It's a very divisive film, which I don't understand why, but then I think that genre is divisive. You know, this sort of the screwball slapstick farce is a bit of a divisive genre. But it's based on a board game. It's based on Cluedo, and it's sort of a slight riff on Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None. And it's like a hybrid murder mystery where all these characters turn up at a mansion. They don't know why they've all been drawn there. And a series of murders start to happen. And they had a gimmick ending, which is where my best bit comes from, where they decided to create alternate endings for the film where different characters would be the one that had committed the murder. And they decided they were going to sort of put them in different cinemas so you wouldn't know which ending you were going to get. And, of course, that was something that nobody wanted. And the film bombed, and it was, you know, trashed by the critics.
So hold on. Can you clarify that to me? Right. So when they released the film, they released different cuts of the film to random cinemas with different endings. Is that what you mean?
So the film played exactly the same way up until the reveal of who the killer was. And they had three reveals. Okay. They had ending, where she's revealed to be being blackmailed by Mr. Body, who's the sort of the main victim in the film. And she's working with who's an escort, and they've been carrying out the different murders that have been going on. So it's revealed that she's the one that committed the murders. And in some cinemas, they got that. And in other cinemas, at the very last reel, they switched it out and it became who was revealed to be the killer. And she killed the who'd worked for her, and then she just went into a frenzy, a panicked frenzy, thinking she's going to get found out. So she kept killing more and more people to sort of cover her tracks. And then they had the real ending, which was that was responsible for leaking. So you had like was the one that killed and killed the and that's considered to be the real ending.
Oh, wow.
It was a gimmick that just didn't work with audiences because people were not going to go pay to see the same film again just to get a different ending, not knowing if they would get that ending. You know, it was completely random. But then on the video and on the DVD, you can see all three are sort of stacked back to back to back. But they were even going to do a fourth one. They were going to do a fourth one where was the killer.
Oh my God. I didn't notice.
They were right not to shoot it because people did not like the idea of multiple endings to a film. But for me, I love that film. It's such a laugh.
I have to go back and watch it. It's been a long, long time, and I don't think I gave it a proper shake. It was years and years ago, so maybe I didn't even. I don't even know if I got to the end of this film. But I love that idea.
It is one of those ones, though, where it divides people. It's like a matinee film in my eyes. It's one of those films that's it's best watched on like a rainy Saturday or a rainy Sunday.
That's exactly when I was watching it, and I was taken away. I remember that feeling of like, oh, I'm enjoying sitting down watching this, and I was distracted and whatever it was, and never got to the end. But you really made me like intrigued to kind of go and see that. That's fantastic. Hey, if Rian Johnson sees this, he's going to get some ideas for his Knives Out franchise for Netflix. just choose your own ending.
I think everyone got scared off by it because it was such a maligned film. And I honestly, as I say, I don't get it. It was co-written by John Landis, and he was going to direct it. He went off to do Spies Like Us, and so the co-writer, got to direct. Can you imagine that? Letting the writer direct?
No, they're not capable.
He did a great job. I mean, he went on from that to do My Cousin Vinny and stuff, so he had chops. But it's clever. It was Jonathan Lynn.
Wow. Jonathan Lynn. Mm. Like, My Cousin Vinny is a cracker of a courtroom comedy. It's fantastic. It's really... I saw that in the cinema, and so he made that. Do you know what else he made, or did he, you know, are those his two most notable
films? Those were his most notable ones. He's done a few flops after that, which I decided not to make a note of. I think it's like Nuns on the Run, and he did a lot of TV after that. You know, he was doing like Yes Minister Yes Prime Minister. But I really enjoyed that film, and, you know, I like Noises Off, which is similar, but it, you know. Your mileage may vary, but for me, Clue is like the best film based on a game. So it's based on a real game.
Well, it's not as good as Battleship. No, you know, in all fairness. You know, come on.
It's better than Battleship. It's better than Tomb Raider, Warcraft. It's better than The Imitation Game.
Wadsworth, am I right in thinking there is nobody else in this house?
No.
Then there is someone else in this house.
No, sorry. I said no meaning yes.
No meaning yes? Look, I want a straight answer. Is there someone else or isn't there? Yes or no?
No.
No, there is or no, there isn't?
Yes.
Please! Don't you think we should get that man out of the house before he finds out what's been going on here?
I'm going to watch this.
Clue. Check it out. It's brilliant. So now, Will, as per usual, I have to spin the wheel for you.
I do dread this moment every week. I do dread it.
I dread it as well. But here we go.
Yeah.
Spinning. Spinning. And it is best torture porn scene.
Oh, Kevin.
I'm so excited to hear what the writer of Song of the Sea and Wolfwalkers thinks of best torture porn scene.
Hold on. If you remember from earlier in this season,
yeah,
I have a little thing in my back pocket called the veto.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I do. And I am going to use my veto right now, thank you very much, because I've only seen one Saw film, and it was enough for me. And I'm not going to go through. I'm just not. I'm sorry. I'm
actually kind of glad that you're using it, to be honest, because I would have no idea what my pick would be. It would probably be one of the moments from Seven.
Oh, shit.
And I don't think even that counts.
Because you don't actually see any. You don't see anything on screen.
Okay, so you're vetoing it. So it's gone.
I'm vetoing that shit. Spin it again, Kevin.
Totally forgot that you had that. Okay, yeah. All right. I'm spinning. Best deleted scene.
Oh, God. Okay.
You've wasted your veto.
I wasted my veto. But can I use deleted scene that may have been used in a kind of an extended cut that was like reintegrated into a later cut of the film?
Well, I suppose when everything has to do with like director's cuts and how else would we know what a deleted scene is unless we've seen it in some capacity? So yeah. I would say if a deleted scene has been included in alternate cuts, that counts.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that definitely counts. That's better. I like, because there's a lot of films out there that are, yeah, okay. I'm with that. I'm excited.
Best deleted scene. Okay, I need to think about that. It's like stuff you would have seen on extra features.
Oh, there's good stuff there. There's good stuff there. There's good stuff, definitely. I already have a front runner.
We've gotten two really weird topics, best post-credit scene and best deleted scene. But then I suppose no other podcast is sort of tackling these big issues.
Yeah, it's a big topical issues, Kevin. These are conversations that need to be had. Let's get people on the streets talking about their best post-credit scene and get the word fixed.
Definitely. Okay, well, so where can people find you?
People can find me...
Online.
I'm glad you clarified that. on Twitter, under Wilmsfilm, WILLUMSFILLUM. Kevin, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter as well, under @KevinDHan. And as I say each week, you can email us. We're at bestbitspod@gmail.com, and we'd love to hear from you. And we'd also really, really love it if you would share, like, subscribe, recommend the show to people you like, and to give us a positive rating on whatever platform you use, because it helps us with the algorithm. And it's already helping us where we've charted for the first time.
Yeah.
And it's really encouraging to see, because, you know, we're a small podcast. It's just me and Will. We don't have like a team of people working with us. We do everything ourselves, and we love doing it. And we just want to make sure that people know that it's here and can join in.
It's all about the ratings. It's all about the ratings. That's the thing that really pushes it up. That's the thing we've learned.
It is. Absolutely.
But listen, I love hearing from people. And it's been, and I've read everything anyone's said on Twitter, and it's great to see so many people reacting. It just makes it feel like we're not speaking to ourselves. I think I said that last week, Kevin. But yeah, it's class. Thanks very much.
Keep those eggplant emojis coming. I enjoy them so much.
Kevin, have you not planted your eggplants yet? Oh my God! Come on, get on.
All right, we'll talk to you next week for best deleted scene.
Brilliant. Bye.
Best Bits podcast is produced by Will and Kevin.
All audio clips and music heard in this episode is the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended.
If you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff.
If you have any notes, comments, scenes...
So, Will, now that we are in the post-credits of this show... I thought this would be the perfect opportunity now to tell people about our big grand plan, our secret initiative.
Are you serious? You want to do it like this way? After the show's finished, you want to just do it like that?
I do. And it's what we're calling All the Best Bits, which are audio commentary episodes where we don't just talk about our favourite scenes, we talk about all the scenes.
So we're basically taking all of our favourite films, the films that we picked as our best bits, and we're going to do those lovely little hangout audio commentaries things with them. They're incredibly relaxing, and they're a totally different vibe to this main show. It's thank you content. That's what it is.
So stay tuned, I guess. And now,
go home.
Go home.
It's over.
Switch off. Talk to your family.
Go.
Excuse me.
And here is a clip from the lad's latest Mini Bits bonus show. The full episode, plus 100 more, are available on their Patreon.
Play dumb and stupid.
Two fun guys.
Two fun guys.
So what's the story, Kevin? It's been a minute.
It's been a minute. You've got news. Tell us your news. Hello, everybody. This is Kevin, and I'm joined by Will, and this is Minibit 72, just in case we didn't say so. I wonder what theme tune I'll put at the beginning of this. I've recorded so many of them. I usually just take my pick when I go for the...
Right.
Will I go for the egotistical one, or the epic one, or the 80s synthwave one, or the... Cowboy and Western one. We'll see. Depends on the mood of this mini bits.
Okay, okay, okay. I'm looking forward to hearing which one it is. I'm curious because you said to me, you've got news.
Yeah.
And I'm like going, what fucking news do I have?
You nearly died during the week. I mean, that is pretty monumental.
There it is. There's me dying right there on mic. Yeah, I almost died. Yeah, I almost died.
Because of the Discord.
It was the Discord, yeah. It was the Discord's fault.
What happened? Tell me what happened.
Yeah.
Because we haven't actually spoken in about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Since the Irish recording, the Irish episode recording, we haven't been on mic together. Do you want to talk about this? We can cut it out if you don't want to.
I do want it to be at the front of, you know, the way we have this, you know, the tag.
We'll save that.
So I'll talk about it later. I'll talk about it later in the episode. You know, we can talk about something else, but I'm quite happy to put it later for our special people.
Okay. Well, listen, I saw these questions on TikTok during the last few weeks, and I thought, those are good questions. I'm going to make a note of them. I'm going to ask Will some of them. So I've got about five of them here. They're quite philosophical.
Okay.
And maybe if I ask you one as the teaser of this episode, and then we can pepper out the other one. Right. See how you get on.
Okay.
So give me from one to five, a number from one to five.
Go. Let's go five. Let's go all five.
Question five. If you could, would you rather spend a day with your younger self or your older self? Take your time.
No.
It's live radio.
This is a Back to the Future question.
Right? Is it?
Am I talking to my older self and my older self going, hey kid, bet on the socks?
Would you sooner meet up with your older self and get the wisdom of your older self to say to you what you probably need to hear now, which is get a shift on, get a wiggle on? Or would you sooner go back to your younger self and say, listen, that thing that you're worried about or that thing that you don't do and you should have done, you know, give him a pointer or some sort of a steer. So it's whether you want
to
steer
going to work
or do you
out?
Want to give your younger self a steer? Forgetting about the ramifications and the consequences. Forget all the sort of the grandfather paradox. For those that, what the grandfather paradox is, go back to our time travel episode.
Yeah. All right. I think I'll go back to my younger self, right? And I'll say, you know, I'll ask my younger self, come here, what's the big worry? What are you worried about? And
you should know that.
Well,
don't you
ask,
remember what you're worried about?
But the specific thing, because I worry about so many things. You know, we all worry about various different things, you know, from, you know.
Losing your Spider-Man shoes.
Yes. I'm going to go, don't worry about it. Don't worry about
good,
it. Because
it'll
guess
be good
what?
Content.
Next week, you're going to have Batman willies.
Also,
right?
In the future, there's a thing called a podcast. And you'll be able to tell people what happened to your Spider-Man shoes on the podcast.
Exactly. It's all the bad shit that's happening to you will be, it's filling you up and it will be good content. That's all it is. All that embarrassing stuff that you do is going to be all right as long as you don't be too much of a prick and just stay the course. That's kind of it.
I'd be the opposite.
No, I think I would have a nice little sit down.
You'd have what? A nice shit?
I'd have a nice sit down and a nice little chat with myself. That's what I would do. How would you do? You're saying you would do the opposite.
I'd do the opposite. I'd want to speak to my future self because I can enact whatever they tell me. So I can, you know, live in the moment. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to know. I'd like foresight. Tell me what is coming towards me or what I need to be aware of. And I will make the change now because I can. Going back to my younger self, I would just be unburdening my younger self. And then, I don't know, hoping that that would change the course of my life. But I'm very happy with my life. I think everything's turned out fantastic. So I wouldn't want to risk change anything. So, yeah.
Honestly, that was my first thought as well. I was like, going, yeah, I want all the information my older self can give me. And but I was like, I'll go back and I'll kind of help my younger self out a little bit.
When you hit 65, your prostate is going to blow up like a basketball.
Yeah. I didn't want to talk to my older self because what if my oldest self is 37? You know, I only live, you know, another 2 years. I'm obviously by saying that I'm implying I'm 35 right now.
I was going to say, I was like getting confused there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I said I needed to put some clarity on that one. I would be afraid for my older self to come back, and my older self go come back, and I see the state of him, and I go, oh shit, just one look at my older self and go, oh fuck no.
Listen, I just had the camera angled wrong there when I turned on the webcam here, and that's already rattled me. I'm like, oh God.
You should never have the camera pointed at your balls, Kevin. Never, ever, ever, ever. Point
that's how I make
your
a living.
Balls.
$5.99 a month. Well, listen, that'll do as a teaser.
Yes, go on.
Thank you to everybody that's listened to the latest episode, which we haven't recorded yet, and I hope it was a good episode, because I have no fucking clue what I'm going to talk about on that episode. But we've already done it now, because you've heard us talking about it. But also, this might be one of the random episodes. So, this is the Patreon. We do the mini bits. Come along. They're great episodes. We're going to keep talking, though. See ya.
Fuck them.
Yeah, fuck that.
Fuck that.
Bye.